normally menstruating women who weren't taking oral contraceptives and women taking oral contraceptives. And I just measured their baseline hormone levels at certain points through the female's menstrual cycle. And I found it very interesting that the men had higher endogenous or natural estrogen levels over the women taking oral contraceptives.
Welcome to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. So together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now, here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, this is Tina Muir. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with me today for the latest episode of the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast. This is the first interview episode of 2016, and hopefully last week you enjoyed the recap episode of what we have coming in this year and kind of what I've been up to a little bit more, as some of you have asked about that. Now today I have it's kind of a female based episode, although I do think a lot of males will be able to resonate with what my guest and I talk about, particularly when it comes to comparison. So today I'm talking to Sarah Joyce, who is a sports scientist with specialized knowledge of the female athlete. And we also kind of dive deep today into the scientific research and what she found about gender differences, the effects of female sex hormones on muscle damage and recovery. But actually, interestingly, we actually didn't talk about this as much as I thought we would. We kind of ended up going off on a bit of a tangent, but actually I think you might find it kind of enjoyable because we talked about the comparison trap and weight gain and how, you know, this time of year we tend to be very critical of ourselves because we may have indulged a little over the winter holidays or whatever it may be, and the comparison trap can really get us in trouble. So I really think a lot of people will be able to enjoy this episode, and I look forward to hearing your thoughts on this. Sarah is also an established writer and is the editor-in-chief of Women's Running Magazine Australia, so you will have other ways to keep in touch with her after this episode. So without further ado, let's go meet Sarah. Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Sarah.
Thank you, Tina. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to be talking to you right now. So let's start with you, as I want to kind of dive quite deep into the topics today, but just so anyone listening has a few moments to acclimatize, or, you know, if you're getting anything done right now, get it finished because you're probably going to want to listen to this. So before we dive into that deep stuff, let's learn a little more about you. So I just wanted you to give us some kind of something from your history, maybe a short summary of your running life, or if there was a moment you remember in specific where you fell in love with running, or just something about you to let our listeners know.
Yeah, sure. Well, I took up running when I was aged 18 years of age, so quite a while ago now. Mm-hmm. I don't like to reveal my age, but anyway. But as a child, my mum and dad were both recreational runners, so I have memories of being involved in running and going to running events. But, yeah, it wasn't really until I was 18 that I took it up. I was involved in netball and basketball as a teenager, and mm-hmm. I was quite good at those, but really not that athletically gifted, which I think is why I really liked running, because it wasn't competitive. I could just do it. Really, the only competitor was myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess like most recreational runners, it's just a lifestyle for me now. So it's just part of my life. Most of my friends are runners. I've been to some amazing places through running. I met my partner through running. So, yeah, it's really just my lifestyle, and now I'm lucky enough to work in running as well, so I find that quite lucky as well.
Yeah, that's great, and thank you for sharing that. And it's interesting that you mentioned that that was the only, like you said, the only sport you felt like you could do. But I think although you said that you're the only competitor, and I think a lot of people agree with that it's nice that you're not fighting for a spot, or you're not competing, you know, against trying to outbeat others at any cost. You're just, it's you for the most part anyway, if we can get it right, although sometimes that's tough. And when did your passion for like working with female athletes come through? Like, was there a moment you remember?
Probably at university. I mean, if you talk to my family, they'd probably also have been a feminist for most of my life. But for for as long as I can remember, I have admired female athletes. But when I was at university, I guess my understanding of the differences between males and females developed. And one thing I noticed, I look back now at my university textbooks, is in each physiology textbook, there was 2 to 3 pages dedicated to the female athlete.
Yep.
And that was within a special issues chapter, and all the rest was just general. And, you know, really, in my opinion, half the book should be dedicated to males and mm-hmm. half be dedicated to females. So, you know, seeing just 2 to 3 pages about women, I sort of thought, oh, that's not right. And then my understanding developed about the differences between men and women, and I guess that's where my passion came from.
Yeah. And then, so you just mentioned that about, you know, a few pages and how you think it should be half and half. So it's in your research, it's been that different that, you know, you would split it up for the most part? Like, you found that many differences between males and females?
Yeah, really? Definitely. Yeah, there's lots of difference. And my research was based on endocrinology, so mm-hmm. looking at the mm-hmm. effects of female sex hormones. And we know that there's big differences, and they do affect the way that women respond to exercise and training.
Wow, yeah, okay. Well, let's dive into those a little bit more. And so I've noticed, I don't know if it's just because it's that awareness thing, but I've noticed there seems to be kind of more focus coming in recent years. Do you feel like people are starting to pay more attention to it, or do you feel that this is very much still brushed under the carpet?
Yeah, certainly. I do think people are paying more attention to it, and also in areas outside of exercise physiology, which mm-hmm. is my area. I mean, even in the areas of medicine and pharmacology now, they're realising that generally we've just treated males and females the same, and in terms of their responses to drugs or treatments, women are quite different. They require different doses and respond differently to the drugs. So even outside of the realm of exercise physiology, I think people are taking notice. But within the sports science field, definitely. And I guess outside of science, if you're looking anecdotally at coaches, they definitely work with female athletes differently and treat them differently to how they do males in terms of training response.
Absolutely. And my husband is a coach for men and women, but I definitely see the difference between, well, you know, I guess myself as well, how he coaches the women and the men. It is definitely mentally there, we require different treatment as well. And do you have a theory on why up to this point it's been mostly ignored, the women's issues or women's differences?
I guess I have a personal theory. I don't know how correct it is.
We'd love to hear it.
From all the sports science literature I've read, and I've read quite a bit mm-hmm. through my scientific career, is I think women have been ignored generally because it's just too hard. And I know from my own experience and my own studies, it is very hard to control, particularly the menstrual cycle and hormonal fluctuations. And, you know, I had to make a big effort in my data collection phase to control for that. So most of the studies that you do read, it's just, it's hard, too hard to control for it. So they either exclude women altogether, or they take women who are taking oral contraceptives because then they're on a balanced sort of hormonal level.
Oh, okay.
So I think generally, yeah, we're just too difficult, so we're excluded.
Well, we're kind of known for doing that, aren't we, being the ones that cause all the trouble. Happy wife, happy life kind of thing.
Yeah.
And when it comes to your like findings, you said you've done a lot of research, and I'm really excited to hear about what you found. Can you share some of the most significant findings that you've had with females and female running?
Yeah, sure. So I guess the most novel finding that I find quite interesting, and as a PhD candidate and looking at my data, I found this really exciting. And like I said, it is quite novel, but in my study I took 3 groups. So I had men and I had normally menstruating women who weren't taking oral contraceptives and women taking oral contraceptives. And I just measured their baseline hormone levels at certain points through the female's menstrual cycle. And I found it very interesting that the men had higher endogenous or natural estrogen levels over wow. the women taking oral contraceptives. And I think the men were quite surprised that, you know,
I've got more estrogen than probably half the women on campus. yeah, so that was one of the probably the novel findings yeah. that I found interesting.
And what, like, did you have any theories as to why that was? That's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty straightforward. So women taking oral contraceptives take a synthetic estrogen, and that suppresses their natural estrogen, which is yeah. how the oral contraceptives work. So essentially they can't get pregnant. So that's what it's designed to do. Mm-hmm. But, I never thought that their levels would be lower than what a male's would be.
I bet that shuts some of the males up in the study.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry to any males listening who are kind of understanding of this. But yeah. And what else did you find that was kind of interesting that people might like to learn about?
Yeah, so my personal interest is in endurance performance, I guess, and training.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked very closely at muscle damage and recovery. So what happens when you damage a muscle extensively and then how quickly it recovers. And really interestingly, there was big differences. We already knew there was differences between men and women, but there was big differences between the women taking oral contraceptives and the normally menstruating women. So I mentioned that the males had higher estrogen levels than the girls taking oral contraceptives, and the girls taking oral contraceptives, they responded more like men to the damaging exercise.
Okay. And was that a good thing or
was that? Well, that's sort of where my study ended. So, okay. I mean, there's so much more you could do. You asked if people were more interested in this now, and I'd love to see more people doing training studies and looking at the effects mm-hmm. of, yeah, this muscle damage and recovery.
Okay. And then so do you plan on going into that a bit more in the future?
I would really like to, but I've sort of stepped out of academia now, and it's difficult to get back into it. But I mean, if I had the opportunity, I'd love to be involved in more of that research.
Okay, so any researchers or people who have the resources to do that, that's an idea for you to get going on. So then you said that you've kind of stepped out of it. This is probably a good time to kind of share what you are doing now when it comes to this, because I'm sure, even though you're not researching it, it's very much in the forefront of your mind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I when I finished my PhD, I started editing Women's Running Australia. So yep. It's Australia's only women's running magazine. So I'm still using my knowledge on the female athlete, but talking more, I guess, to recreational runners through the magazine.
Mm-hmm. And what have you kind of found? Is there anything you've kind of noticed with women runners? I mean, I'm thinking kind of emotional factors. As a scientist, I'm sure you loved the facts and the research, but what have you found about emotions? I'm sure that comes into it a lot more with, you know, like you said, working with women more on a one-to-one than a study.
Yeah, well, actually, going back to my research study, one profound thing I noticed was between males and females was the protocol that my subjects had to go through was pretty intense, and their commitment to the research was pretty high. So the damage protocol, I mean, I wouldn't like to do it myself. It was pretty extreme damage. So imagine how you feel after a marathon doubled. It was really bad. Plus they had to undergo a lot of repeat blood samples, and the women just took it like a grain of salt. They just but the men, sorry to the males that are listening, but they were a little bit more sensitive and had issues with, I had to listen to a lot of complaining from the men, where the women just sort of, they were hardcore essentially.
That's funny, because we get the reputation for being the complaining ones. And actually, that's funny you mentioned that. Yesterday my chiropractor was talking about how usually the women handle the pain when he does active release, handle the pain a bit better. He said he thought a lot of it was because the men come in thinking, oh, this is not going to be bad, and then it's like worse than they think, and the women come in thinking, oh, this is going to hurt so much, and then it's a little bit easier.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's the same. And just out of curiosity, you said you, like, at the end of a marathon doubled. How did you do that?
So the damage protocol we used was, we did eccentric contractions, so mm-hmm. lengthening contractions of the mm-hmm. quadricep muscle, which is known to cause the greatest damage. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking back now, but they did 240 slow eccentric contractions on each quad, and that was broken down into sets of 10. But overall, the protocol took about 3 hours. So, you know, the length of a marathon, but it was the slow damage. It was designed to cause extreme damage, and it certainly did. When you saw these people 24 and 48 hours after.
limping around.
Yeah, exactly. And plus then I was taking all this blood from them. And so, yeah, I have to thank my subjects. They were real troopers.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I wonder if they would sign up with it for another study with you in the future, or if they'd be like, no, please. Yeah. I don't want to do this. It's not worth it.
Well, I guarantee that the men definitely wouldn't. The girls would probably pants up again.
Well, hopefully in the future you can get that going, and we'll see if any of the same people apply. Yeah. And then what else have you kind of been enjoying with Women's Running Australia?
I really enjoy being involved in recreational female running, and I think it's a real boom in Australia at the moment that we're seeing more and more women are taking up running. And back to the beginning of our conversation where I said it's not competitive, I think that's what women are finding that they really like about it, and it's easy to do. But now if you look at, you know, a lot of the proportion of running races, you know, females used to sort of make up 10 or 12% of competitors. They're 50% of them now in most events. So, yeah, so it's great, just more and more women taking part.
Yeah, no, I've definitely noticed a bit of a switch, and it's great to see. And actually I just took my honeymoon to Australia, and we were surprised with, well, not just women, but the amount of people out there running and active. And it seems in Australia you've got it, you know, obviously you've got the nice weather and, you know, that helps a lot, and the beaches, but it just seems like people are a lot more active. There's a lot of cycling, people cycle everywhere, and I kind of hope some of the other cultures of the world kind of follow along with
future. And I guess what goes with that is people are trying to be active and healthy, and then their want for knowledge and information about training and being healthy and how do they get better goes along with that. So that's where Women's Running Australia can assist.
And where do you see Women's Running Australia kind of headed? What direction do you see them going in for the future, or you going in?
That's a good question.
Just keep progressing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've got plans for immediate plans and long-term plans. But, yeah, just getting bigger and bigger, I hope, and more people are reading and picking up the magazine and more women taking up running. Like I said, it's growing, but I'd like to see that trend continuing.
And I heard in another interview that you do not use models for your cover images. You only use like real runners. So I just wanted you to kind of explain that a little more for listeners, because, you know, we're starting to see that a little bit over here. I think Women's Running America was the first one to do that, but it'd be nice if more of them did. So if you had a few things you wanted to share about the magazine that they're doing that's good that people could check out online.
Yeah, sure. So it's funny that you mentioned that, because just today I received our latest issue. Every year we run a front cover competition where our readers actually submit photos to go on the cover.
Oh, cool.
And we started that a few years ago, and that was really nice because it's just one of our readers, their photo is on the cover. So I think women really relate to that. But we have previously used models, but I've been publishing the magazine for 2 years now, and since then, yeah, we've just gone away from that. And most of the sort of everyday women that we do put on the cover, they have a really interesting story behind why they started running or what they've achieved, so it's nice to feature them and get a little bit of exposure for what they do, because there's some amazing women out there. I mean, when you read what they do and what they achieve, it just it really blows me away.
Absolutely, and that's something I want to focus on more this year in the podcast, is kind of reading behind some of the runners out there, because you're absolutely right. I mean, every runner has their own story of how it began, and it is fascinating to hear about them. So it's great that you're, you know, taking the time to feature people like that. And I'm guessing all those people that applied, you got to read their stories, and, you know, you probably did. You have like a finalist kind of thing that you were checking out some of them, or was it all made within your, like, you kind of all decided under the table and then kind of revealed the winner?
Yeah, so okay. only my editorial team up until today has known who the winner is, and I'm not sure if she even knows yet, so that's quite exciting. But subscribers will start receiving their copies today and tomorrow.
Oh, cool. That's great.
That'll be discovered, yeah. But so that's, I mean, our front cover competition, but other covers we've taken, you know, just an everyday woman from an event. So she's running an event and we've taken her actual event photo and used that.
Great.
Yeah, as opposed to doing sort of a stage shoot as such.
Okay. And then so what if we think about beginner runners or people who, like you mentioned, have just taken it up and stuff, what advice do you have based on your experience, based on women's running and your research on women starting who may have become a little disheartened with running or felt like just having a bit of a struggle right now?
Take it slow is the main thing, and definitely enjoy the little milestones and achievements, because the more you're running, the better you get those achievements, or your improvements become less and less. So enjoy those while you have them early on. But the other thing I think is not comparing yourself to other people. So it sort of is your own journey. You can't really look at other people's race times or what training they're doing. Just like I said before, compete against yourself, or even looking at other people's body composition, you know, just think about yourself when it's your own journey. I always think like if I compared myself to a runner like you, Tina, I would be constantly disheartened. So it's really just about your own journey. You can't look at what other people are doing. I mean, you can draw on them for inspiration and advice, but that's my biggest thing, is just try and not compare yourself to other people.
Absolutely. And I think that's something critical, that it's so difficult with this social media world we live in, where, you know, most people only post the positive that's coming, and, you know, I feel so great. And then, you know, say you'd had a bad day or bad run, you think, oh, well, everyone around me is running so well and I'm struggling, especially if it's, you know, a few days or a few weeks in a row, which happens, or if you have an injury. And I just want to say right now, I think I've mentioned this before, but it's not just like you saying it right there. It's not just brand new runners. I know I really struggle with it sometimes, actually quite a lot of the time. And if you are listening and you do kind of struggle with that, well, do your best to take that away from you. Like I force myself not to look at some social media accounts that make me feel bad about myself. So do the same thing. Like you said, draw inspiration from people, but the comparison thing, if there's someone that you notice when you go on their site makes you feel bad about yourself, just try hard. And I know it's easy to say, try hard not to look at that and look for the sources of inspiration. So I'm glad you mentioned that.
And actually on that point, the other thing I notice a lot of is a lot of people are giving other people advice, which is great, but what they're doing mightn't be right for you. And what they're doing, they mightn't even explain why they're doing that. They mightn't even know why they're doing that. So having an understanding of the sort of training that you're doing can help yourself. So be cautious at even looking at what other people are doing, I think, for sure.
Absolutely. And based on what you have kind of said, women's running, you know, strives to be one of those places where you can get the actual information, and, you know, you've researched it with people like you behind it. You've actually got the research. And I know that's something we pride ourselves on at Runners Connect, is not having the fluff. So I will put links to the show in the show notes, just for anyone new listening, for our website, our blog posts, and for women's running. And I'll mention that right now, which is runnersconnect.net/RC89. Okay, so I just want to kind of dive in a little bit deeper, just with some of your experience of what you have found when it comes to women. Just some advice for women, or if someone's struggling with, you know, they've started with a male and the male is kind of taking off ahead of them, and it can be frustrating. So just some findings or pieces of advice you would give for women based on what you have found.
I think it just goes back to taking it slow and not comparing yourself, particularly to boys. But you'll often find if a male can beat you over 10K, do the training and challenge him to a longer event, because that's where women tend to excel. Slow and steady wins the race, which is definitely true when it comes to female endurance athletes. But again, I wouldn't even bother comparing myself to anyone else, but let alone a male.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Okay. And then What about recovery based on your experience? I know you said you didn't have the science behind it, but I'm guessing after that study, it kind of piqued your interest that you wanted to look into it a little bit more of what others had found.
Mm-hmm. Recovery is a big issue. And I think a lot of new runners, they get the running bug and they don't want to stop running, and that often leads to a lot of overuse injuries. But I mean, generally from my studies, you can say, well, women can train a lot harder and back up. So repeated days, they don't need as much recovery as men in general. But in saying that, I think, yeah, people do need to be cautious to include recovery in their training program, schedule it in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a big thing that's missing from a lot of recreational runners programs that I see.
Yeah, and we've actually found the same thing, and we've done multiple articles, and there'll be some links in the show notes to them again, about easy running and how most runners do not give themselves enough easy days. Everything ends up being, you know, moderate, which is crucial to recovery and helps in so many ways, even though it's kind of hard for us to wrap our minds around how running slow mm-hmm. helps us. But Yeah, that's good that you found that, and interesting that the women kind of in general recovered a bit quicker than the men. And then what about when it comes to nutrition? Have you found anything about females and, you know, a big difference when it comes to nutrition for running?
Yeah, I'm not a dietitian, so I also like to leave that to the experts. But women do have, I guess, specific nutrition needs compared to men, but generally I don't deal with elite runners, and obviously when you look at them, having a low body weight is crucial. But in terms of recreational runners, I just think balance is the key. So, you know, avoid these restriction diets where food groups are omitted or calories are restricted. Basically, I think if a diet's hard to maintain, or you have to force yourself to do it, you probably shouldn't be doing it. Personally, I'm quite lucky because I enjoy healthy food, so eating healthy is quite easy for me. But at the same time, I'm a massive chocoholic, but I allow myself to have that, and, you know, I guess that's another reason why I run. But yeah, it really comes back to balance, I think, for most people. And if you do get that balance, each individual might have some specific dietary needs that are personalized, but generally, you know, if you get that balance right, you shouldn't have too much need to go over and beyond that.
Mm-hmm. And actually, that links very well with one of our last episode of 2015, which we interviewed Katie Foster from the website Runs for Cookies, and she lost over 125 pounds and through running and changing her diet. And the biggest thing she said was, only make changes that you can keep for life. And mm-hmm. she said that was what did it for her, you know, going on a yo-yo diet or saying, I want to lose this quickly. But she made changes that she knew she could keep. And I think that is exactly what you just said right there, that mm-hmm. like, that doesn't have to be, like you said, you're a chocoholic, and mm-hmm. I definitely have my sweet tooth, mm-hmm. and so does Katie. Like, but other people, it may be, you know, something savory or salty or whatever, but you don't have to completely eliminate that. It's just making changes that you can keep. And like you mentioned, you know, not a fad diet or not a mm-hmm. Restriction, because you can't keep it up. So that's good that you mentioned that. And I'll put a link mm-hmm. to her interview in the show notes. And then what about when it comes to body fat? Is there a certain percentage that you've found you wouldn't recommend women get below, or do you have any thoughts on that compared to men?
Yeah, look, like I said before, for elite runners or someone trying to qualify for a national team or something like that, there's no denying that a low body weight's going to be beneficial to their performance, but they need to do that without compromising their health, obviously, and mm-hmm. and they're people who need specific dietary advice, you know, from a professional. But when it comes to recreational runners, which is mostly what I deal with, I think they really shouldn't worry too much about body fat percentage, because, you know, they're not trying to qualify for anything or win a race, most of them. And I think as long as they're within a healthy weight range, because we do know that being overweight and obese isn't good for our health. So as long as you're in a healthy weight range and they're happy, it's all that really matters.
Mm-hmm. And have you found BMI is enough? And it's not the most accurate indicator, but it's very easy. Have you found that when you say a healthy weight, staying within mm-hmm. that range is good enough?
That and hip to weight ratio. Okay. I think using those combined, and if you're concerned that you might be outside of what's considered a healthy weight, it doesn't hurt to see a professional and get some advice to really look at that. But I think most female runners, it's not something they really should be focusing on or worried about.
Okay, and then the hip to weight ratio, I'll get you to send me some kind of link to how people can calculate that, as I'm guessing there's some kind of online calculator that people can use.
Yeah, it's a simple measurement of comparing your hip to waist ratio. So essentially it's saying that the more weight you carry around your middle, it's not good for your health. So the bigger your ratio, the better.
And have you found that's more applicable with women than men, or is it about the same?
It's about the same, but yeah, it is a good measure for women and men too. So yeah, but I can certainly send you some information on that.
Great. All right, I'll put that in the show notes. And then what about a different kind of fat? Have you found in any way that women should eat more fat than men? I mean, that's something I've kind of heard in recent years. And I know, again, you're not a nutritionist, so you're going to be wary about saying this, but have you found anything in your research?
Yeah, no, it's certainly true that I'm wary about what I say. but I do have a very good understanding of the metabolic differences between men and women and what fuels they utilize when they are exercising. And one of the effects of high levels of estrogen is women is we do utilize fat a lot better and conserve our glycogen stores, which is advantageous for endurance events. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing. But for that reason, sort of our need for carbohydrates and sugars is probably less lower than what men's are.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, but that's from a performance perspective, not so much looking at health, which mm-hmm. is probably what you're alluding to in that question, I think.
I don't know. I mean, I guess it could be either or. I was just kind of I know a lot of our listeners are recreational runners, but recreational runners who want to kind of perform and get the most out of them. A lot of people are, striving for a Boston qualifier or striving to break 4 hours or whatever it may be, and they want to do anything that can give them the edge.
I think gone are the days where, if you look back 10 years ago, women were sort of avoiding fat at all costs and looking for low fat, whereas now it's certainly not recommended that they do. And, a lot of women are seeking sort of some more foods with good fats in them and are not so scared of them either. They're realising the benefits of it.
Yeah. Okay, great. All right. And then I just wanted to mention, as you said this, when it comes to healthy eating, you said you enjoy healthy foods. Have you kind of noticed that, did you always like healthy food? Or I personally think that once you start eating it, you kind of start craving it. Once you get your diet to a point, you begin to want it more. So have you kind of found that, or was that just always loved it?
Well, my dad was a naturopath when I was a child, okay. So we were brought up on a fairly strict diet. But I guess that's really ingrained in me that's just sort of the healthy foods are what I choose. But one thing I do notice with myself is when I'm training for an event or, my training load's quite high, I do crave and I generally eat better. And in my periods of sort of recovery after a race or I have a break, just without even noticing or even trying, my diet tends to not be as good. So it seems to go hand in hand with the training, I think. It's just what you're reaching for when you're doing that heavy load.
Mm-hmm. And have you found the other extreme that, it's important when you are training hard to get it right. But what about your thoughts? I mean, I personally am a big believer in after a big race or an important race, you take that time away and you enjoy whatever the heck you want for a few weeks. Have you found that with as well?
Oh, yes, definitely. So I actually did my first Ironman late last year, and just coming off a break from that now, which was nice because my break was over Christmas and New Year's, mm-hmm. so that was perfect timing. But yeah, I definitely enjoyed some sleep-ins and probably consuming a little bit more champagne than I normally would, and yeah, just enjoying life a bit more, even though I enjoy running, but yeah, just being a bit more relaxed about things.
No, I think that's something, to me personally, that's something very important. And I mentioned, I've just been on my honeymoon, and I gained 10 pounds in that time over that last month of my honeymoon and Christmas. And you know, it's hard not to panic about it, but at the same time, I think it is very important for women and men, yeah. or anyone, yeah. After you've had that goal race where you've really, you know, dedicated yourself, given yourself the right food, you've trained hard, you've put your body in that state that you talked about, where you, you know, struggle to walk around, that you take that time to, like you said, be a normal person who does, you know, stay out a bit later, or have a few more glasses of champagne without thinking, oh, you know, what if I feel bad on my run tomorrow?
Yeah. So. And the other thing, I'm the same, just coming off a recovery period, is you do feel bad about it, but I actually also enjoy the process of getting fit again. So, you know, it's going to take 2 months, and it's a slow process, but, you know, watching your body change again and your fitness build back up and getting back to the times that you're running is an exciting process. And, you know, if you do the work, that'll happen. So, yeah, it's all part of it.
Definitely. I am so glad you mentioned that, because that, I think, is huge and something that we often forget about. We look at ourselves at that point and say, oh, look what I've lost. Or, you know, I look at my arms and say, oh, where is all my definition gone? But you, like you said, and my husband said it to me earlier, like it's the starting point. And you know, if you do take a picture of yourself at the beginning, then, you know, at the time right now, you might look at a picture of yourself after Christmas and think, oh, I don't even want to look at that. But get yourself a picture. So when, you know, in 2 months' time, like you said, when you have changed, you can actually look back and you can see a big difference in how you've changed over that time. You can see the muscles poking through a little more, but like you said, along the journey, you can notice those little changes. And, you know, maybe you put on a pair of pants that don't fit you just right now, mm-hmm. and then they fit you better now. And so I think that's something that's very, very important to notice, mention. And I didn't mention that. So I think that's very helpful for women.
Yeah. It's just unfortunate for us that the gains happen a lot slower than the losses.
It's very easy to fall off and kind of struggle with it, but it's much more difficult to keep it going. And I think once you keep it going, it helps. But
said,
you notice it a lot more, especially within yourself. And unfortunately, as we all know, the images that are portrayed of women, women in particular, are usually airbrushed, and it's hard to not strive for that comparison trap once again.
You're reading Women's Running Australia, because that's just designed to make everyone feel good about themselves.
That's good. Okay, well, people should definitely check that out. And I think this is really going to help a lot of people, because I know it is something that women in particular do struggle with. And while we have this episode, and while I have you here, and I know, like you mentioned, you're a feminist, if you want to call yourself that, I just kind of like to talk about it just a little bit more for women who are listening right now. I'm sure all the males have long checked out, or if you haven't, then maybe this is an issue that comes up for you, and that's something does happen as well. So when it comes to women, and we were talking earlier about comparison, do you find that the comparison does happen more with the weight issue, or is it more performance based? Have you seen that through,
like, comparing yourself to other women?
I
think a lot of women probably don't like to admit it, but we do look at how other people look. It's just how we are. And I think back to why I started running, and one of the reasons is weight control, because you like to keep slim. It is hard not to do that, but we're also different.
Mm-hmm. I know, and it is, because you see, and I've mentioned this before, but I might as well say it again. Everyone thinks being an elite runner, I stand on the starting line and I'm so confident, and I'm just king of the world. And you mentioned, you know, well, if I look like you, but in my opinion, I look at others and I think, oh, I wish I looked like that. And it's, we're never going to be happy. The grass is always going to be greener on the other side. And do you have any thoughts on how little ways of, you know, someone looking at their body right now and thinking, learning to love it based on, have you found any little tips that other runners that you've talked to have recommended or just yourself?
Not really. I don't, you've kind of got me stumped there. I don't really have much advice in that area. Yeah, no, I cannot answer that one. Sorry,
okay.
Tina.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess for me, the only thing I've kind of found that really helps is just kind of thinking about your strengths. Like say you know, you feel that your arms are a little bigger. Well, you know, under those arms, maybe you've got more strength to pump those arms up a hill. Or let's say your tummy, you're a little more self-conscious about that. Okay, well, you can look at that and think, okay, well, that's very feminine. I've got my curves, which, you know, make me feel good about myself and make me feel more like a woman. Or maybe you've got a bit of a bigger butt and you can say, well, okay, well, that gives me big glutes, which is going to help me to power myself to run faster. So I just find it's very good to kind of look at those, look at your body and, you know, think about how it's got its strengths. And I did a thing with a friend a few months ago where each day we would wake up and tell each other something that we loved about our bodies. So each morning, you know, I remember one she gave me as an example was the IT band. Like she loved being able to see her IT band kind of not, you know, sticking out, but she loved being able to kind of see the shape of it. It's when she moved her legs in certain ways. So maybe if you are struggling with that right now, maybe that's something you can try to.
Yeah, definitely. With a friend. That idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. Okay, Sarah, well, I just have a few more questions, which I would like you to keep your answers short. But if you could, this is the, I'm going to call it the race round for now, but we'll see if we come up with a different name.
Sure.
So
sure.
Just a few quick questions. What is the greatest advice you've ever received?
Slow down. You don't have to do all your training so fast.
Good. That's great. Your favorite running book or blog? And you're not allowed to say women's running.
Oh, that was, well, that's the first thing that came to mind.
We know that.
Definitely Women's Running Australia. I'm looking at my bookshelf thinking, what is my next one? Might have to come back to that one, Tina.
Okay, I'll give you a second. I think I already know the answer to this, but what would you like to tell a new runner?
Yeah, have fun and enjoy the milestones and improvements.
Okay, love that, love that. Your favourite running product?
It would have to be my running sticks. So running they're just sticks. A little. Yeah, so I know you wanted me to keep this short, but I might have to give a little bit of
explanation. Go into it, no problem. No.
So they're little bits of plywood that I just carry in my hands, and they were originally invented, I guess you would say, by Australian triathlete Peter Robinson, and it's just to help me with my running technique. So I tended to drop my hands down when I got fatigued and had threw one out, hand out to the side, so it just helps me remind me of that. And I've fixed the technique now, but now I'm just addicted. I don't really go for a run without them.
And how long are they? Like, are they pretty big or
just no,
keep it in your hands so you feel something?
Yeah, exactly. And they're not light and I don't grip. They are light, sorry, and I don't grip onto them. They're just essentially sitting in my hands to make sure I don't let them drop down.
Interesting. Okay, I'll put a link to those in the show notes as well. That I'm sure some other people are interested in that as well.
Yeah, I'll have to look and see if I can find anything online because it was actually, a coach started me using them and now I've just continued to use them, and most people hate them, but I feel naked if I'm not running.
Okay, all right, well, if you can't find anything by the time this goes live, then I guess our listeners can just go find a stick, an actual stick outside, and just give that a try.
I actually did that after a fun run a couple of weeks ago and I forgot them, so I just went in and found a couple of twigs and used those.
There you go. Okay, then that's easy to do. And then who is your favourite expert to look to for advice?
I probably would have to say my partner, who's a triathlon coach, and he's, we have a lot of, I guess you'd say, healthy discussions. But yeah, I get a lot of advice from him, that's for sure.
Okay, that's great. I'm sure he's going to love to hear that. And then have you come back to your running book or blog?
No, I can't answer that one. I'm sorry.
Okay, we'll say that you're really just that passionate about women's running that they're just nothing else in your head.
Yeah, there's just nothing else as good. I'm sorry.
Okay, we'll allow you to take that. All right. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate talking to you today, and I'm sure our listeners have got a lot out of this. So thank you for your time, and I wish you the best of luck with what's coming in 2016.
Yeah, thanks, Tina. It's been a pleasure. And if anyone does have any questions about my research, I'm always happy to answer them. So feel free to put my email address in the show notes.
Okay, I absolutely will. All right, thank you so much.
Thanks, bye.
I really enjoy talking about those kind of topics, and I hope you do too. I think Sarah had some great insights there, and it was just kind of great to get a discussion going on the comparison trap, as I know so many of us fall into it, and it can be so damaging to our confidence. So hopefully you're able to take some insight from this episode. If you did enjoy this podcast, I would love if you could subscribe, which you can do so in addition to checking out some other cool stuff by visiting the brand new podcast page that we have this year, which is at runnersconnect.net/run-to-the-top, or you can actually sign up to our email newsletter through any of the Runners Connect web pages. You will be able to see the sign up on the side of the page or sometimes at the top of the page. So that's all from me. Next week you are going to be hearing from Patrick McCohen, who is a expert, and he's going to be talking to us about breathing and how we can use that to improve our performance and just feel better in our lives. So hope you look forward to that. Have a great week.